is the news.
The headlines this hour. President Putin calls on Russian defense industry to increase its weapons production to meet the needs of the army for the war in Ukraine. China expresses anger at a new U.S. law that boosts military assistance for Taiwan, saying that it will damage peace and stability in the volatile region. And airlines cancel thousands of flights in the U.S. as a massive winter storm disrupts airport operations. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us. Russia's president urges the country's defense industry to increase its production in order to meet the needs of forces fighting in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin has told the industry's chiefs to make sure that the army receives the military equipment in the shortest possible time. He made the remarks during a visit to a weapon manufacturing center. Putin also said the industry should improve the technical quality of the equipment. This comes as Western countries, especially the U.S., have been supplying Ukraine with billions of dollars worth of advanced weapons since the beginning of the war in February. The U.S. House of Representatives has approved the $45 billion aid package for Ukraine. The military and economic assistance is part of a $1.6 trillion government funding bill that has passed the Senate. It will now go to U.S. President Joe Biden to be signed into law. The U.S. has been Ukraine's main military sponsor in the war with Russia. It has already sent aid worth around $50 billion to Ukraine this year. Russia has repeatedly warned that foreign military aid for Ukraine will only drag out the war and escalate the human suffering. The war in Ukraine has plunged Moscow-Washington ties to their lowest point in decades. Russia's ambassador to the U.S. has compared the state of the relations to an ice age, warning of the high risk of a clash.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has visited Washington in a much-publicized visit to the U.S. This is the first foreign visit that Zelensky has made to the U.S. since the war began back in February. During a meeting at the White House, President Joe Biden pledged to give more military support to Ukraine, including a new missile system.
As I said, Mr. President, you don't have to worry. We are staying with Ukraine as long as Ukraine is there. Thank you all.
The U.S. pledged $1.85 billion in military aid for Ukraine, including a Patriot missile system. Ukrainian officials have continuously called on the U.S. to deliver that system. Biden said the U.S. and Ukraine would continue to project a, quote, united defense against Russia as the war drags on. And as expected, the visit has drawn an angry response from Russia. Moscow's envoy to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, has denounced the visit as a, quote, Hollywood-style trip, accusing Washington of throwing all of its colossal resources, weapons, and intelligence capabilities at Kiev. The Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, has said that there had been no signs of readiness for peace talks during Zelensky's visit. He further noted that this was evidence that the U.S. was fighting a proxy war with Russia, quote, to the last Ukrainian. The Pentagon has disclosed that the U.S. has sent $20 billion worth of military aid to Ukraine in 2022. The recent $1.7 trillion federal spending bill includes $45 billion that's earmarked for Ukraine in 2023. Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu noted earlier that Kiev had already received more than $97 billion worth of weapons and ammunition, and that Russia was already fighting the entire West and NATO.
The U.S. continues to supply Ukraine with arms and military equipment, despite growing calls from some Republican congressmen for more scrutiny over aid delivered to Kiev. Some polls also suggest the support for the U.S. backing of the war in Ukraine is waning.
As the West, spearheaded by the U.S., continues to pour more military and economic aid packages to Ukraine, there are now calls for more transparency. In the U.S., Republicans are calling for plans to exercise oversight powers to scrutinize tens of billions of dollars that the U.S. has spent. Republicans have been more skeptical than their Democratic counterparts in the Senate about funding Ukraine's defenses. Some Republicans have cited corruption in Ukraine, saying that there are concerns about the aid going to the country. Prior to the Ukrainian president's remarks, a few Republicans had already made public their opposition to the spending bill and further aid to Ukraine. We should be focused on trying to contain the war, not expand the war. And this sends the message that we are kind of okay with expanding the war. And I think we should be sending a different message, is what Warren Davidson, a Republican congressman, has said. Another Republican congressman, Matthew Gaetz, has criticized Zelensky, saying that American politicians who indulge his requests are unwilling to put Ukraine first.
You've got Americans here at home that are demanding accountability on our southwest border. You've got crime rampant. You've got historic inflation. You have a litany of issues that we all are paying for at the behest of this administration. And no one can tell us where this money is going. My heart breaks for the Ukrainians, absolutely. But every American deserves to know where every single dollar has gone.
This comes amid a declining support of Republican voters for more military aid to Ukraine. In the latest poll, 33% of Republicans agreed with prolonged support compared to 61% of Democrats and 46% of independents.
From nurses to teachers to Broadway employees, British workers in various sectors have been staging back-to-back walkouts since the summertime. And now air travelers in the country are warned of delays as passport control staff go on a strike ahead of Christmas. The Public and Commercial Services Union says over 1,000 Border Force staff walked out of their jobs on Friday. This is the first day of their industrial action, which is due to last until New Year, as they are dissatisfied with their pays, demanding raises. Raise offer does not keep pace with the double-digit inflation. The industrial unrest days. Britain's busiest airport, Heathrow Airport, for travel disruptions. The UK is reeling from strikes over pay and working conditions. That's amid a cost of living crisis combined by fears of a recession.
...2022 has been dominated by a cost-of-living crisis, and the figures are staggering. Inflation is running at a double-digit pace, the highest in 40 years, and far outpacing wage growth. While food prices have shot up almost 20%, and the cost of heating a typical home has jumped more than 150%. As temperatures plummet below zero and desperation rises, key sector worker unions have launched mass strike actions to pressure the government to force wage rises.
The people who are out here on strike today are the same people who not only worked through the pandemic, we worked for the people. We'd get their prescriptions, we'd get their milk and bread.
We just want a pay rise in line with the cost of living. At the moment, what we're getting is actually terms of a pay cut. So it's not even in line with inflation. Everything's gone up. We're just like everybody else. We're all struggling.
This is not about pay. This is about our jobs.
The situation has become so dire in Britain that many families will have to choose whether to heat their homes or feed their families this Christmas.
It is very distressing. It's a situation which, in a way, unimaginable for a country which is supposed to be one of the richest countries in Europe and in the West. Why is it we have these extremes of poverty? Why are people, some people, forced to choose between heating and eating? I mean, there's something completely wrong about our system. We should be plugging and supporting and promoting equality and, not oppressing the poor. You know, there's something which says a lot about our political system, which is flawed.
The government has pinned much of the blame on economic recovery from the COVID era. However, critics say its ruling Conservative Party incompetence and leadership instability that has also left the economy in a dire state. A lesser discussed reason for a European-wide crisis is the ongoing Ukraine war. Britain has remained a staunch supporter of continued fighting, shipments of arms and financial support.
I think the first, deliver more military aid, and that military aid evolves to meet the situation that we're now facing. And that means more air defence systems, it means artillery, it means armoured vehicles. For our part in the United Kingdom, we've pledged to match or exceed the £2.3 billion in aid that we provided this year, next year.
Low wages, higher fuel costs, inflation and major strike action have all marred 2022. Does the government have what it takes to resolve these many issues in 2023? Probably not. It's going to be a long road with most likely higher taxation, major cuts in public spending and renewed pressure on an already struggling British working class. Robert Carter, London.
Police have clashed with protesters in the French capital, Paris, after a deadly shooting with a suspected racist motive on a Kurdish center. Protesters gathered near the site of the shooting, hurling stones at the police. Security forces fired tear gas and attempted to disperse the crowd. The French President Emmanuel Macron called the shooting an odious attack. The interior minister has reinforced police protection of Kurdish community sites in Paris and elsewhere across the country. A 69-year-old has been arrested in connection with the shooting, which killed three people and injured three others. The suspect was known to authorities and had a history of racism and attacks on foreign nationals, especially the Kurds. China says it's resolutely opposed to a new U.S. law that boosts military assistance for Taiwan. Beijing says the law contains provisions that cause serious damage to peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. Taipei, however, has welcomed the legislation, which will provide it with $10 billion in security aid. Taiwan says the U.S. move shows the importance that Washington attaches to ties with the island and its security. Taiwan has been a source of tensions between China and the U.S. for years. That is because the U.S. continues to supply arms to the island, which China considers its own territory. Beijing says Washington's assistance emboldens Taipei in its independence push. The U.S. sees its hegemony challenged by a quickly emerging superpower that, based on most estimates, is bound to overtake it as the number one economy in the world. Washington has resorted to unorthodox tactics to halt its main rival's growth and progress. Those methods are not received well by China. The U.S. is provoking China militarily while simultaneously trying to draw regional countries into its own sphere and away from China. One hot-button issue is Taiwan. COVID keeps surging rapidly across China, with daily infections topping 500,000 in a single city alone. Local media in Qingdao say that the eastern city has been seeing between 490,000 and 530,000 new cases per day. They've cited a city health official, but did not specify the period during which the surge took place. The same official has predicted an approaching peak and said that infections will rise by 10% at the weekend. Other Chinese cities have also faced a surge in infections ever since the government ended its zero-COVID policy this month. Snap lockdowns, lengthy quarantines, and travel curbs have all been lifted. The World Health Organization has expressed concern over the virus surge in China. Japan's decision to boost its military spending has drawn strong rebukes from civic leaders in South Korea. Tokyo argues this move to build up its forces comes amid threats from North Korea and China. Tokyo's arms purchases will also provide a boon for U.S. weapons producers. Frank Smith has more from Seoul.
Japan has slowly developed the scope and scale of its military forces since its defeat in World War II. Despite its pacifist constitution, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida Friday announced a major shift in its post-war self-defense principle.
When considering strengthening our defense capabilities this time, we will assume various situations and consider whether the current capabilities of self-defense forces can deter threats to Japan based on the capabilities of our opponents and new ways of fighting.
Outside the Japanese embassy in Seoul, South Korea, activists protested against Japan's new military plans. Japan ruled over Korea for much of the first half of the 20th century. Civic leaders argue Japan's force buildup, to include various U.S. missiles and counter-strike strategy, can enable its military to again become offensive in nature.
The Japanese government's so-called counterattack capability actually involves preemptively striking enemy bases in North Korea, China, and Russia with missiles. As a result, Japan's principle of self-defense is completely broken, and the peace constitution, its minimum responsibility as a war criminal state, remained empty.
Japan suggests it's responding to increasing threats from North Korea and China.
Over the next 5 years, Japan plans to double its military spending from 1% to 2% of GDP. And much of that more than $300 billion is earmarked to be spent in America's military-industrial complex.
Japan's new military budget comes just as the U.S. increases its annual military spending to $858 billion. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Heavy snow has left at least 13 people dead in Japan over the last week. Dozens more have been injured. That, according to Japanese public broadcaster NHK. Snowstorms have hit areas across northern, eastern, and western Japan since December 17. Thousands of households have suffered power blackouts. Heavy snow has also caused massive traffic jams, disrupting train and airplane services. Thousands of flights have been canceled in the U.S. as a massive winter storm brings airport operations down to a crawl. Nearly 7,000 flights were canceled on Friday and Thursday, leaving holiday travelers frustrated. The Federal Aviation Administration imposed ground stops and delays to de-ice a number of airport runways as a result of the storms. Some 4,000 U.S. flights were also delayed on Friday. Poor weather conditions have also disrupted railroad travel in the holiday season, forcing the cancellation of dozens of trains. Festivities are underway in Bethlehem, the biblical birthplace of Jesus and the Palestinian city in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. People have converged on Manger Square, carrying flags and beating drums on Christmas Eve. The square has been decorated with fireworks, light shows, and an illuminating giant tree. The main attraction in Bethlehem is the 4th century church of the Nativity. That's where Jesus was born, according to Christian tradition. The Christmas season offers measured cheer for Palestinians in the city, which is separated from outlets by an Israeli apartheid barrier. Bethlehem was closed for the last two Christmas seasons because of the COVID pandemic. That reduced the number of tourists. However, this year, the Palestinian tourism minister expects that the number will increase. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
This year's record-breaking global displacement crisis calls for immigration policies that reflect humanity, not cruelty. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote in this regard, "This year had the unwelcome distinction of being the first to see over 100 million people displaced worldwide. Such a staggering milestone reminds us that greater efforts are needed to address the underlying causes forcing so many innocent people to flee their homes. Even more alarming, this milestone was reached by the middle of the year. Over 50 million people were internally displaced within their own countries. Over 30 million were refugees forced to flee their countries, and some 4.3 million were stateless. More than 70% of all refugees came from five countries mired in violent conflict. Climate-related emergencies, meanwhile, including severe floods in Pakistan and drought in Somalia, contributed heavily to the growing number of people internally displaced. Many countries have welcomed refugees this year, despite seismic challenges and limited resources. Far too often, states adopt double standards in their treatment of refugees and asylum seekers. Such compassion in the face of enduring struggles is encouraging and should extend to all crises. Refugees have also remained resilient while confronting these obstacles, which speaks to their inspiring grit and bravery that rarely makes the news. But far too often, states adopt double standards in their treatment of refugees and asylum seekers. This is especially true for Haitians, who have long encountered discriminatory U.S. immigration policies and abuse, exemplified by images of U.S. Border Patrol agents on horseback whipping desperate Haitian asylum seekers in Del Rio, Texas, last year, between October 2018 and June 2021. The U.S. denied asylum to Haitians more than any other nationality. After decades of political and economic turmoil, living conditions in Haiti deteriorated this year due to gang violence following 2021 assassination of then-president Jovenel Moïse. Nearly half the country faces acute hunger. A lack of safe drinking water and basic sanitation have also led to a rapid re-emergence of cholera. As a result, many Haitians have had to flee their country, which prompted the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, to call on all countries to stand in solidarity with Haiti and not to return Haitians to a country that is extremely fragile. Unfortunately, the U.S. regime accelerated the mass expulsion of more than 25,000 Haitians between September 2021 and May 2022. They've all returned to Haiti, where they face likely harm and humanitarian disaster. Most of the expulsions have been carried out under Title 42, a rarely used provision of U.S. health law first invoked by President Trump and continued under President Biden to bar people from seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border under the pretext of preventing COVID-19. By denying Haitians and others the right to seek asylum, this use of Title 42 blatantly violates both international and U.S. law. It's discrimination masquerading as a public health policy, and it's only created more chaos at the border. According to reports and official data, in November, a federal judge's ruling confirmed as much by striking down Title 42, although what happens next remains to be seen. In another step forward, Biden recently extended temporary protected status for Haitians already in the U.S. The U.S. regime has long served as a safe haven for the persecuted, but it must do more to treat all asylum seekers with respect and allow them to fully access the asylum process. The disparate treatment of refugees and asylum seekers also emphasizes the larger need for a more efficient, just, and inclusive U.S. immigration system. This year's record-breaking global displacement crisis calls for greater protections and investment by the international community instead of more indifference and cruelty. It demands humane policies anchored in respect and dignity for all people.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and greetings to our Christian listeners on the eve of Christmas. Wish the West regards at the birthday anniversary of Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, whom Islam considers as one of the five greatest messengers of God. Here we present you a prophecy about the advent of the last prophet by the virgin-born Messiah, as mentioned in the Gospel of St. Barnabas, one of the closest disciples of Jesus, which surprisingly has been removed from the present edition of the New Testament. Know, O Barnabas, that for this I must have great persecution, and shall be sold by one of my disciples, that is Judas Iscariot, for 30 pieces of money. Whereupon I am sure that he who shall sell me shall be slain in my name, for that God shall take me up from the earth and shall change the appearance of the traitor, so that everyone shall believe him to be me. Nevertheless, when he dies an evil death, I shall abide in that dishonor for a long time in the world. But when Muhammad shall come, the holy messenger of God, that infamy shall be taken away, and this shall God do because I have confessed the truth of the Messiah, who shall give me this reward, that I shall be known to be alive, to be a stranger to that death of infamy.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, prevention in family pathology. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of prevention in family pathology. When we talk about pathology, we mean that what are the causes that are affecting the social system or the family system in a family. Therefore, when we talk about the issues, we need to talk about the prevention as well. The first prevention, which we must give importance to, that is to give importance to the religious teachings in a family. Generally, we have seen that the families who are basically seeing a loss in their family system, in the relation within the family, generally they don't pay attention to the teachings, the Islamic teachings or the religious teachings which are said in the Quran or which are emphasized by the Prophet to follow. Therefore, it is necessary to have an attention towards the Islamic teachings or the religious teachings. Why? Because religious is a complete set of life. It's a complete book and it's a complete way of living a life. Therefore, when we follow the religion according to the teachings of Quran or the pure Quranic teachings or Muhammadan teachings, the teachings by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then we will be able to save our family. We will be able to prevent our family or cure the family relations. Therefore, it is necessary to pay attention to the Islamic teachings and the religious teachings which are said in the Quran. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of prevention in the family pathology. Now, we said that it is necessary to have attention towards the religious teachings and the Islamic teachings that are said by the Quran, that have come in the Quran. Most important thing, if we look in the Quran, for example, when we look at the laws, for example, the law of praying, the law related to the fasting, to the Hajj, I don't know, the other laws that we have, for example, for the criminal and the social crime, if someone commits that, the laws, basically, the rulings, the total verses that we have in the Quran, they are only 500 verses, whereas the whole Quran is composed of more than 6,000 verses. Now, the question is, what are the other verses about? The major part of the other verses is related to the ethics, and the other major part, which is very important, is related to the theological issues, to the issues related to the belief. Therefore, we need to have the true beliefs in the family. The parents, they should teach their kids the true beliefs, the true theological issues, so that they do not shake when they go ahead and when they talk to someone about their beliefs. If someone asks them a question, if someone is bringing an argument, they should be able to answer the argument in its best way through the Quranic teaching. So therefore, when we say that we need to have attention towards the Islamic teachings, the very first thing is the aqidah. It is the belief. It is my beliefs, that why I believe in one God. Other than that, obviously, we need to know about the issues and the question and the doubts that generally people have. For example, why you wear the veil or do hijab, why you pray 5-time prayers, why you mourn in the month of Muharram. So all these things, we need to know about them. And when we know them, when we have a firm knowledge about them, then obviously we can save even our family from being dispersed, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, scientific news, artistic news, with the light.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet or carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is on the way. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones, which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture.
Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type, and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants. On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Irshan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Irshan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Irshan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge? How much power do you want to be able to draw from it? So again, we're targeting call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time, or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance costs. Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
In most of us,
habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape, but the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuges, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together in strong and metal frames. They're growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turn 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports. A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Germany has reportedly cut its reliance on Russian supplies from 55% last year to the current 20%. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of the Russian publication RT noted Germany has cut its reliance on Russian gas by nearly two-thirds compared to last year. Bloomberg reported recently, citing the country's Association of Energy and Water Industries, BDEW. According to the report, the share of Russian gas consumed in Germany has fallen to around 20% this year, from 55% in 2021. This happened amid a significant drop in imports of the Russian fuel to the EU due to sanctions, explosions in September on Russia's Nord Stream gas pipelines, which left them inoperable, and Berlin's moves to diversify supplies. Germany is reportedly short by around 50 billion cubic meters of gas in yearly deliveries as a result of the reduction in Russian supplies. According to BDEW, however, the country has managed to reduce its overall demand by around 15% this year due to mild weather and a campaign to reduce consumption. Germany has compensated for the reduction in Russian supplies by increasing imports from the Netherlands, Belgium, and France, according to BDEW. The country also plans to step up its liquefied natural gas LNG imports. Last week, Germany launched its first floating LNG terminal at the North Seaport of Wilhelmshaven, with another four set to be deployed in the coming month. The planned terminals are expected to give the country an annual LNG import capacity of at least 29.5 BCM, roughly a third of its yearly gas demand of 90.5 BCM. According to Chancellor Olaf Scholz, the terminals will help ensure that Germany's energy supplies do not depend on pipelines from Russia. LNG deliveries, however, are expected to cost much more than Russian pipeline gas. Meanwhile, Politico reported EU countries finally struck a gas price cap deal after months of fraught divisions over a key aspect of the bloc's response to the energy crisis, but the final settlement may end up pleasing no one. Energy ministers meeting in Brussels for their final summit of the year reached political agreements on a so-called market correction mechanism. Under the plan, which is set to come into force on February 15th and last for 1 year, trades on Europe's gas exchanges will be capped at 180 euros per megawatt hour if that price level is reached for 3 working days and European wholesale gas prices are, for the same length of time, 35 euros above the global price of liquefied natural gas LNG. The complex policy tool, which is set well below the 275 euros trigger price originally proposed by the European Commission and applies to month-ahead, 3-month and 1-year contracts, was approved by EU countries with a qualified majority. Hungary opposed, while Austria and the Netherlands abstained. Germany, which had long opposed price cap proposals pushed by an alliance of southern and eastern countries, as well as Belgium, was able to support the scheme, but only with significant safeguards, which addressed Berlin's concerns that intervening in the European gas market could drive international LNG cargoes away from the continent, just as Europe and Germany in particular is trying to wean itself off its former addiction to Russian gas. The policy was designed to avoid the kinds of price spikes seen in the summer, when prices at Europe's main trading hub, the TTF, briefly hit 345 euros per MWH. Those prices have now cooled considerably to 115 euros per MWH, but remain 4 to 5 times higher than what they averaged before Russia-Ukraine conflicts and threw Europe's gas supply into chaos, piling pressure on domestic consumers and businesses, particularly in energy-intensive sectors like chemicals, steel, and glass. If ever triggered, the cap would, in theory, apply for at least 20 working days. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni called it a little big victory, while Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki said it spells the end. But Dutch Energy Minister Rob Jetten told Politico he was still worried about the measure's impact. The focus should be on lowering gas prices for European consumers while also guaranteeing security of gas supply, he said. I'm not completely convinced this market correction mechanism is beneficial for both those topics. In a sign of how divisive the discussion still remains, a senior diplomat from one pro-cap country said the measure is not enough and only a temporary emergency measure, saying wholesale gas prices are still 4 times higher than normal and a broader market reform was necessary. They said, this gives the impression that we can afford 180 euros per megawatt hour, which we cannot. There are still hurdles in the way of the policy ever coming into force. The European Commission has throughout shared the concerns of the anti-price cap countries about the plan's possible impact on gas supply and market stability. Energy Commissioner Kadri Simpson emphasized in a post-summit press conference that the Commission stands ready to suspend ex ante the activation of the mechanism if a forthcoming report by the EU markets watchdog ESMA and the energy regulator ACER, along with analysis by the European Central Bank, shows that the risks overweigh the benefits. The bank has already spoken out about possible risks to market stability. Europe's cold snap this December has seen gas storage levels reduced from near full to 84%. That's still a fairly comfortable level for this time of the year. But how the price cap might interact with the global gas market next spring and summer, when European countries will once again be racing to fill their underground gas storage facilities, will be a question for energy ministers when they meet again in 2023. A new year, but the same energy crisis.
Iran and Saudi Arabia in the world of politics.
Part 1.